A very good morning to you, my dear ladies and gentlemen, and others, in case you are non-binary. So there are those that are non-binary. So good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, my dear listeners. It's a new month. It's a November month. Welcome to November. So welcome to November. It's a new month. And it's a good month for us. Yeah, it's starting very well. Good rain. I got shocked actually when I come in. Just getting out of the car, it was raining, and getting in the studio, get shocked, really, you know. Beautiful weather. Hopefully it continues that way. It started raining, and we would like to continue raining. So good morning to you. And welcome to Eagle FM. And, you know, our time is about 6 minutes past the hour of eight. You know, we always had that a little bit of a click before we started, but we all sorted out. Good morning and welcome. How was your weekend? How did your weekend go? So hopefully you have a very, you know, good time. And there were a couple of weddings, you know, There was some wedding that I was... I was invited, gone there, didn't stay long, but it was a good weekend, and hopefully you had a beautiful weekend as well. So good morning to you, and of course welcome to your number one talk radio station, your Eagle FM. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us this morning and for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company as usual. And it's always a pleasure for us to be in your company this morning. And welcome to Mind Matter. Oh, what Mind Matter? Woo! That was actually Saturday. So it has to be a switch. Come on, welcome to Unpacking the Day. Thanks for joining us this morning, and welcome to Unpacking the Day. So my name is Michael Ashavili, and this is Unpacking the Day, not Mind Matter. This is your daily dose of what really going on in business, economics, and politics. And every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear, a little witty, and always curious, asking the question that matter and give you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared by us and by those calling in during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So we're here to unpack what others are saying, spark meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your platform, and this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So good morning and welcome. Our time is about 8 minutes past the hour of eight. And today is the 3rd of November. The year is running away. The year is actually running away. So the 3rd of November, and we normally, as usual, we start with our first segment that's looking at what happened during the course of history in Africa. What happened on this day in Africa? So we look at some of the significant events that happened in the course of history in the continent, on the continent. So on the 3rd of November in 1975, the ruling party of Angola, the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, held an emergency meeting of its Politburo and anonymously decided to request immediate and massive military reinforcement from Havana, from Cuba. Now, this decision triggered or accelerated the Cuban military intervention in Angola, often referred to as Operation Carlota. Now, to support the MPLA against other functions like UNITA and outside forces. Now, so it was key moment. This was a key moment in the Cold War era decolonization and civil conflict in Africa, Angola's independence journey. It was a key moment for Angola's independence journey and external intervention, and how local parties sought international support. So, and on the very same day, in 1960, Cameroon nationalist leader Félix Roland Félix Roland Moumi was assassinated in Geneva on November 3rd in 1960. So he was poisoned with thallium by the French International Service. So because of his position because of his opposition to French colonial rule and his connection with China. So Moumi was the leader of the Union of the People of Cameroon, UPC, and his death was a major blow to the country's independence movement. So, and on the very same day, November the 3rd, in 1983, in our neighboring country, in our big brother, a referendum in South Africa approved a new constitution that offered limited political representation to Indian and colored people. So the change was part of an effort by the apartheid government to reform the system, but it still continued to exclude the majority, the black majority. So the reform did not lead to a substantive change, and was met with strong resistance from anti-apartheid groups. And on the 2017, November the 3rd, on 2017, the United States launched its first ever airstrike against the Islamic State in Somalia. That's where striking the ISIS in Somalia. So the action was actually carried out in coordination with Somalia's government and was part of a broader effort to combat terrorism in East Africa. Yeah, that's some of the major events, significant events that happened during the course of history in our continent on this day, on the 3rd of November. So good morning and welcome, you know, if you're just joining us. So today, our thought for the day for the first week of November is: tomorrow belongs to people who prepare for it today. Tomorrow belongs to people who prepare for it today. Okay? So the proverb means that your future outcomes are shaped by what you do now. So it highlights the importance of preparation and planning in the present so that you are ready for opportunities and challenges in the future. So it conveys that the future is not totally predetermined. It's not totally predetermined by fate, but is influenced strongly by our action today. So your work, your decision, your readiness, those are what prepares your future. So it also serves as a call for proactive behavior rather than passive waiting. So instead of hoping tomorrow will be good, you actively build the condition so that tomorrow can be good. So are you preparing today for the future you want? Are you preparing today for the future you want? What does preparation look like in your field, in your work, where you are? So what does it look like? And are you waiting for tomorrow to fix things? Or you build today so that tomorrow is yours? So that's our thought for the day. Tomorrow belongs to the people who prepares for it tomorrow. So thanks for joining us. So, and welcome. It's a new month. Hopefully it comes with a new objective, with a new goals, and it's a new week. And hopefully you rested well and you're ready to face the week with vuma and energy, you know, so that you contribute to the well-being of this beautiful land of the Cape, of this beautiful country. All right. So what do you expect? What can you expect in our show this morning? So, well, making headlines in today's edition of The Villager is that the government financing need will increase to 33.6 billion. So we will definitely get into that. That's what making headline in today's edition of the Villager, and we're gonna unpack that. So, and around 9 o'clock, I will be crossing to Windhoek to my colleague Hende in Windhoek, and he will have maybe about 15 minutes an interview with Sasco, executive director. So we will be crossing to Windhoek around 9 o'clock for an interview by Hent there, my colleague in Windhoek. And just for 15, we'll then get back to me. And your participation, your contribution will be part of the show as well. So you'll be welcome as well to come through. And if we still have time, there's a very good story, good article, just a headline last week on the Villagers as well. It's something that I really, really, really think that we need to talk about. A cheaper credit note, cheaper credit not enough actually to stimulate property sector. That was the headline. And there are quite things maybe that we need to look at into that. So, yeah, if we have time, we're going to get into that. As you can see, it's fully, you know, overload. It's fully overload. It's like a minibus coming from Windhoek, you know, overloaded. So that's what you normally expect in a show of this nature. Good morning and welcome. So after this, we will then start with our first item.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
Yes, a very good morning to you. It's a very beautiful morning on this side of the world. It is raining. It is raining, and hopefully it's continued to rain. Beautiful weather, if you are around Ondangwa. So I hope it is as beautiful as it's here, wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of the brave. So good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of Unpacking the Day right here on Eagle FM. I am Michael Chiavelli, and this morning we're looking at government borrowing and the growing fiscal deficit. A very interesting story in today's edition of The Villager, by Nino Menwabali Hangala. So the article talks about government borrowing needs set to increase dramatically, by 3.8 billion, to be exact, 3.8 billion. And taking the total borrowing requirement of the total borrowing requirement for the 25-26 fiscal year to 33.6 billion. All right. So, but what here But what does this actually mean? What does it mean for us? What does it mean for Namibia? Where is this money going? Where is it going, and how does it impact? How does it impact your pocket? How does it impact my pocket? You know, so now here on Unpacking the Day, we will get into that. So that's what we will get into, from the reason behind the rising borrowing needs. Why actually the increase in borrowing, and also to the impact on how does that then impact the economy, and how it could affect you as an ordinary Namibian. So we also look at the policy choices. I think we're going to also look at the policy choices at play, you know, and of course challenge some of, you know, of the assumption behind certain numbers. So yeah, make sure that you grab that coffee or tea, and definitely I need one here. I'll talk to Mr. John. I need a secretary or so when I'm in the studio. Not a secretary. How would I call someone when I'm in the studio and I need some kind of coffee or something? Can always say, hey, just lift up my hands and then the coffee come running. All right. So I don't think you will do that. All right. So, all right. And I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't need that as well. So, yeah. All right. So, now what we're looking at, so the Namibian government, and please make sure that you subscribe to the Villager. This is a story that actually making the headline, the front page, this morning. Make sure that you subscribe for your own copy, you know. You shouldn't just relying on us. So this is for free. All what you need is just to send a WhatsApp message with your email and your name, with your name and email, to 08081-241-44, and you will be receiving this for free. You will be delivered right in your box, you know, every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So delivered for free. You're not going to pay any cent. So it will be delivered for free for you. So just do that. Subscribe, and you will be able to go through any other news that as well, that also found in today's edition as well. So make sure that you start now. Do that now. I'm waiting. I'm not going to go ahead before you do that. All right? All right. So the Namibian government has just released its released its mid-year budget review, and there is a big number jump out. The big number that is jumping out of there is the 33.6 billion. So this is the amount of the government. This is the amount the government plans to borrow in order to finance the national budget of 100. You remember our budget, the national budget of 106.1 billion. So now the government is planning now to borrow this 33.6 billion to finance that budget of 106.1 billion for the financial year 2025-2026. So why this sudden jump? Why this sudden jump? So well, the government is facing a growing fiscal deficit. So the government is actually facing a growing fiscal deficit, which is basically means the difference between what it plans to spend and what it expects to earn. So that it doesn't work out. Okay? So the difference between what it plans to spend and what it expects to earn. Now, this deficit is expected to widen. To widen from 12.8 billion to 15.8 billion. Now, this is due to several factors, you know, maybe that we can go into, digest those one. Why? So due to several factors, revenue collections are falling short. Those are things. Revenue collection are falling short, especially from diamond sales. We know the story of the diamond, from VAT receipt, and also from income tax. So this is one of the factors that, these are some of the factors that actually, you know, creating, that has widened that deficit. So now the decline in these revenue sources is a really a major concern. It's a major concern to the government. For example, the VIT receipts, the VIT receipt have been weaker than anticipated. They have been weaker than anticipated, and income tax collection are also down. So this gap in revenue means the government needs to borrow more just to keep the wheels of the state running, just to keep the operation running. So, well, as I said, probably this was not anticipated to be weaker, like the VAT receipt and also the income tax collection. So, and that create that gap. It create that need to borrow more just to keep our government running. So our government operation running. So we actually, you can hear that, we are borrowing to keep the government running. Do you understand? To keep, you know, the day-to-day activities running. So now the article also said there is also a significant backlog in VAT refund repayment. Now, 800 million, particularly in the oil and gas sector. So when you think of 800 million, so this is a massive chunk of money that the government owes to business. 800 million the government owes to business that ideally should have been refunded already. So, but with this ongoing fiscal pressure, the government is left with few options. So now, maybe let's get a little bit deeper. Let's follow the story. Let's follow the article a little bit. Who is lending to the government? And who is giving the government money? Eh? Where is the government is borrowing? I think you guess it right. All right? You probably guess it right. So now let's talk about where the money is coming from. Do you have an idea? I know you do have an idea. So if you follow this program, we talked about this quite often. So domestic borrowing has been, well, ramped up. Domestic borrowing has been, you know, the focus of the government. So the government is leaning heavily on local banks and investors to fund its deficit. So as per the sovereign debt management strategy, which slightly we talk about it, when was it? Mr. Klaus Schade, the economist. So, and we also talked about this, what was the story about that we're looking at? So not long time ago, the sovereign debt managed strategy, debt management strategy of the government. The government aims now to raise about 80% of its funding, need from the local source. And then the remaining 20, of course, will come from international market. And so in practical term, this means more government bonds, and issuing more government bonds means the government is borrowing more money to fund its activities or project. And at least at this time, we know that is to fund its operation. So, and the interesting part, you know, the interesting part from the article is that the demand for these bonds has been strong. So there has been a really demand for this bond. And in fact, the Bank of Namibia reported that a recent bond auction have been oversubscribed. So meaning investors are keen to purchase government bonds. So with some bond being actually three times oversubscribed. So yeah, this shows there is still confidence in Namibia's financial stability. But maybe the question is, at what cost? So at what cost? So now you look at it this, look at you whole look at this this borrowing, government borrowing, it as a double-edged sword. You know, you're looking at it as a double-edged sword. Yes, the government is able to raise the fund it needs, but now it's able to do that because it needs fund actually to meet its government need. But the question remains, how sustainable is this model? How sustainable is this model of borrowing? Would you just go on borrowing, you know, to meet your government needs, you go on borrowing and, you know, is that the model? Would that be your sustainable strategy? Would that be your sustainable strategy? So the question is how sustainable is this? Yeah, borrowing from domestic market, I think borrowing from domestic market means local investors, including commercial banks and pension funds. Yeah, so this means they are buying these bonds. So commercial banks and pension funds are buying these bonds. So, but you remember the other things we talk about, but if the government continues borrowing at this rate, now you're looking at the rate the government is borrowing. So, and this is something that I also specifically asked this, you know, to when I was interviewing Mr. Shadi and also Molly. I remember also talking this to Molly, I think, at one point. So if the government continues borrowing at this rate, and we're talking about borrowing, you know, from local investors and local investors, bank and pension fund. So it could crowd out private sectors borrowing. It would make it harder for business to access credit and possibly leading to some kind of, possibly to higher interest rate across the board. So, and he did explain it very well, that that's one of the downside of us, you know, of the government borrowing, you know, especially borrowing locally, you know, especially emphasizing that borrowing domestically. So it could crowd out to private sectors, and the private sectors, what, you know, private sectors might not be able to borrow. And especially, you know, SMEs, well, our commercial bank already, and, you know, it's already a problem for actually smaller enterprises to actually access finance already. So, yeah. So then you also have to ask the question that I asked earlier, get back to that, is this sustainable? And let's take a moment really to reflect on what this means for the economy. Is this sustainable? Borrowing at such a high level can be. I think it shows, I'm thinking of on an individual basis, it can be a sign of economic stress. So when you're borrowing at such a level, at such a high level, it can be a sign of an economic stress. So when the government borrows heavily, well, it increases the country's overall debt burden. So that it increases our burden, our debt burden. And well, of course, this is not unique to Namibia. Okay? This is not unique in this regard. So many countries, especially in a developing world, are in a similar situation. But the challenge for us, I think the challenge for us, and this is the question I'm posing here, and I'm just repeating what other, especially economists, have said, is managing the debt. Are we managing the debt sustainably? Are we managing the debt sustainably? The question you're looking at this, it's at the rate. Do we see any strategies how we manage this sustainably? Well, and you might be asking, how does this impact me? How does that impact me, the ordinary man on the street and woman on the street? So, and whatever other gender you may refer to yourself. So, well, now, as the government borrows more, I think the risk of inflation rises. As the government borrows more, the risk of inflation rises. Why? Because borrowing increases the amount of money circulating in the economy. And when too much money chases too few goods, prices goes up. The prices goes up. So, now, if inflation rises, then... When did you get your salary? It was Friday. So if the inflation rises, the purchasing power of your salary, it shrinks. Eh? It decreases. In a simple terms, the money you earn might not buy you as much as it did before. So definitely that borrowing would impact you. It would impact you. So, and what about the interest rate? How about the interest rate? Well, if the government keeps borrowing heavily, local banks may raise interest rate to compensate for the perceived, perceived risk. And this would affect business that rely on loan to operate or to expand, if you want to expand. And it could affect you directly if you are planning to take out a loan, maybe for a car or a house, or even to fund the education. Maybe you want to fund your own education. It's not everybody. You still actually have to pay education. Maybe your child doesn't go to UNAM or NAST. What about the private institution? We still have to pay for education if your child goes to a private university, so it would affect you. So in some way, all this, it's connected, it's linked, and this is what we do. We sometimes the problem, and I think this is not something you can blame. We don't make link. We actually don't make link to to how all this actually link. We just think, that's a government debt. The government is borrowing. That's too bad. But we don't know how that would also affect you, in one way or another, directly affect you in one way or another. All right? So maybe, when you go through the story, and there's so much more in the story. But now here's where I'm getting worried. Okay, now, so I'm trying to think a little bit deeper now. Okay, while short-term borrowing, for the government, while short borrowing can help the government. So the short-term borrowing can help the government actually meet the urgent financial needs. So long-term sustainability is the real issue. And when you're looking at this, when you're dissecting this, that should be your focus. The long-term sustainability. So we have seen this in many countries where government rely on borrowing, to fill up the gaps. They keep borrowing to fill up the gaps. But at some point, the debt becomes unmanageable. So there comes a point where you just can't manage. You can also look at it in an individual way. If you conduct yourself in that way, individually, there comes a time when you cannot manage your debt anymore. So, and when we look at, as I said, if we look at this from the from long-term outlook. And when we're talking about the National Development Plan 6 and the Vision 2030, all this set, they set ambitious target for economic growth and poverty reductions. So this National Development Plan and the Vision 2030. But at the moment, now you have to think in that way. We set all these plans, you know, this ambitious target for economic growth. And now you look at, okay, if we continue actually invest, if we continue conducting ourselves in this way, if we continue actually borrowing at this rate, how are we going to reach the National Development Plan number NDP 6? How are we going to achieve the target we set for Vision 2030? Of course, we are already far away from achieving the target that we put in 2030, but you know, how we, you know, even if just 30% achieving what we have said. So at the moment we are seeing government borrowing being used now, as we see, it's being used to maintain the status quo. It's not to fund investment that will drive the future growth. So, but actually to maintain the government's operation. Now, if the government keeps borrowing to fund daily expenses rather than investing in the future, in the infrastructure or initiatives that promote long-term growth, so we risk becoming trapped in a circle of debt. We are risking, you know, of becoming trapped in that circle of debt. And you can't just sit and say, no, it's going to be okay. You have those who have that opinion and said, well, it's going to be okay. But do you see the trends? Do you see the trends? So that's... All right. So, yeah, that's the trend, you know. And as I said, when you look at that, we risk really becoming trapped in the circle of debt. So what is the alternative? What are the alternatives? Well, as I said, go to the article, go and read the article. So what are the solutions? So the government has few options. You know, when we're looking at what are the factors that actually, when we look at those factors earlier on, so it can focus on improving revenue collections. That's one of those. By tightening tax compliances and addressing areas like the informal economy. So, and it can also focus on, and this is something that we only speaking about. We mostly speak about it. It's on everyone's lips, you know, every politician's lips, you know, every, you know, economist and whatever lips. So it can also focus on diversifying the economy so that Namibia is not as reliant on few sectors like mining and oil, which are these are very volatile commodities. So yeah, diversifications. When do we start? when do we start? You know, what do we have in place? Do we have do we have policy in place? You know, or we, and as I always said, you know, this is not something that only starting with Mene Tumbo. No, diversification is something that has been talked about, you know, long before that. So, but where are we? All right. So, small strides. There are small. We made some stride, but too slow, you know, too slow. And but also, this is also a thing. But let's also be real, you know, these solutions take time. Yeah, they take time. Structural reforms and economic diversification won't happen overnight. That we understand. You know, it won't happen overnight. And while the government, and here is the thing, while the government can borrow to address immediate needs, it must also put in place policies that will reduce Namibia's dependency on debt in the future. That's what you want to see. So you want to see, how is this the model? Is this the approach we will continue using? Is this the way we will be able to sustain managing debt sustainably? So we must also see that there are policies in place that, you know, help to reduce Namibia's dependency on debt in the future. So that is very important. So now, the other thing, I'm remembering something that one of you mentioned, actually. Is Mr. Andreas? Is Andreas? Is his name one of the caller? It's Andreas, I think. I'm not too sure. All right. This is so, you know, when we're talking about how, my question is, how should we as Namibian respond? So because it is easy, it is actually easy to point fingers. I can be sitting here and point finger at the government, you know, but we need to ask ourselves as well. So when we actually talk about the government, sometimes we only think about the leaders, you know, the lawmakers and all that. We're not just thinking politician and cabinet and what, and all the two bodies, the two assemblies. So, but we also need to think about ourselves. How can we contribute to the solutions? Because in most cases, with the money we have, who squanders that money? Eh? Who squanders that money? It's you and I who are at this level, at the level of implementation. Eh? When money disappears, it's normally at that level. Eh? It's eaten. Normally it's eaten at the implementation level. And who are those? Who are those at that level? So, there are a role for every Namibian. Whether you are a business owner, an employee, or a consumer. So we need to ensure that we are making the best use of the resources we have. We need to have that mentality. Eh? Not the mentality of eating. You mean what I'm... Not the mentality of chopping. Because the mentality at that level, there is also a level of where we only think of ourselves. We only think of our own belly. Eh? I think it's a time for national conversation. Eh? A national conversation also in terms of, I'm now referring to, you know, the other issues, factors that we're looking at. The tax reform. Maybe it's a time for national. What I'm saying, how should we respond? You know, tax reform or changing our spending habit. That's also another thing. The priorities, what we're focusing on, most of the time is the priorities. So is it also time to hold our policymaker accountable and ensure that this borrowing is directed towards project that will truly benefit the next generation of Namibians? So we should hold them accountable. Yeah? So now you're welcome now to come through and have your say. So basically, the government, the story is that the government increased borrowing is a reflection. If you see this is a reflection of definitely of a tough economic times we are facing. Yeah, so, I mean, you borrow because you're somehow facing a difficult time. So, I think that's an indication of that. It's a sign of that. And it highlights a growing gap between income and expenditure. It's showing that there's a growing gap between income. We are not bringing in enough money to spend. So, and it raises a significant question about the sustainability of our fiscal policies. So the demand for government bonds might be strong today. So we see that there is a demand for government bond, but will it be there tomorrow? That's the question. Will it be there tomorrow? So, and as we continue to, you know, to watch this development, it is crucial for all of us. It's crucial for all of us as citizen, whether you're a citizen and a business person or policymakers, to engage in this debate. We need to engage in this debate. And my question now for you as you come through is, how do we balance the immediate financial needs that the government need to address, you know? So how do we balance the immediate financial needs with a long-term economic health, you know? So your thought matters on this issue, issues that are shaping our nation. So our telephone number is 08333-66091, 08333-66091. How do we balance immediate financial needs so that pushing us to, you know, to borrow, and with long-term economic health? 08333-66091. So if you want to come and have your contributions, remember at 9 o'clock we are crossing over to Wintik for an interview for my colleagues in Wintik. So you may come through. We still have about 8 minutes. We can still have one or two people coming through. 08333-66091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome. Welcome and very good morning to you, and welcome to Eagle FM on Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. So yeah, we have been looking at at the story that making headlines, at the story that making headlines, that the government, Namibian government, had just released its mid-year budget review, and we know that there's a big jump, there's a big number jumping out of there, which is actually 33.6 million, a billion, not million, billion. And this is the amount the government plan to borrow in order to finance the national budget. You remember our national budget of 106.1 billion for this fiscal year 2025-2026. So the government is actually facing a growing fiscal deficit. So the deficit expected to widen from 12.8 billion to 15.8 billion And that's because of kind of several things that's happening at once, factors that are happening at once. Revenue collection are falling short. So that's coming especially from the diamond sales. Also looking at the VAT receipts, we talked about that, and also income tax. And income tax also are down, really also down. So, and this gap in revenue means the government needs to borrow. They need to borrow more just to keep, you know, the operation, the government operation running. So that's basically what this is all about. And what is your take on that? So our telephone number is 08333. We're coming to direct. We're coming to you live from Ondangwa. So please do call us here. 08333-66-091. It is a Monday after the end of the month. All right. That makes sense. All right. I don't want to say anything, but well, that also makes sense. All right. A very good morning to you. And thanks for joining us. So, and the other things maybe that we should emphasize as well as who is lending, actually the government. The money is coming from the domestic borrowing, so that you don't worry too much that we actually borrowing from international lenders. So yeah, we actually borrowing locally, and because that aspect, the sovereign debt management strategy, the government is now aimed to raise about 80% of our funding needs from local sources, you know, and only 20% will be come from international market. The person is calling at this time. You have a few minutes. Good morning. Welcome to I'm Back in the Day.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
I'm all right, Mike.
You have actually a minute. And you can call. You can come later. You can call later. We cross into Windhoek. There will be an interview there quickly. And then you... Okay. It's only about for 15 minutes, and then we come back.
Okay, then I can come back, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, let me say, come call back, and then, yeah, that will, you will get enough minutes, actually, to talk, yeah.
All right, my brother.
All right. All right, we are crossing to Windhoek, to my colleague in Windhoek, for that interview. And after 15 or 20, after 15 or 16, 17 minutes, we will be back here. So, yeah, so we're crossing to Windhoek after these commercials.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekiro kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longi shifa ya ishiwite moshiwana. Iye moyawo, ota ingongo tisamweni. ngeshefa ya Namibia ombito mbwanawa olonjika seithane na omayakuro ni randitomwa yoe yongeshefa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House ngwe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nena kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa letu moambo lengera selma onara heta tuimwe datu ndatu heari jamano tano oneyari Eagle FM go aya.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
Okay, thank you very much, Tati Mike, for handing over the mic. We are now joined on the line by the Executive Director of the Southern African Science Service Center for Climate Change and Adaptive Land Management, that is SASCA. We are joined by Professor Indongo. Professor, thank you for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, Dean. Thank you very much.
Yes, once again, thank you very much for making time for us today. So let's get right into it. Today, if you can start with your career journey, what led you to the position of the Executive Director of SASCA?
Thank you, Dee, and good morning to the listeners. Thank you for the question. My journey to becoming the Executive Director of SASCA has been shaped by a passion for leadership, research, and contributing meaningfully to Africa's development. In my previous role, Dee, I served in a senior management position where I had extensive experience in governance, research coordination, and the policy engagement. And over time, I realized that I had acquired the skills, the insights, and the confidence needed to take an executive leadership role. One where I could drive strategy, where I could inspire teams and influence impact at a regional level. So when the opportunity at SASCA arose, I saw it as the perfect platform to elevate my contribution to development in Africa. It has always been my goal to make a substantial contribution to my continent, particularly in advancing research and innovation that supports climate resilience and sustainable growth in Africa. So, just to sum up, really D on this, taking up this role has been both a professional milestone and a personal calling to serve, to ensure that science that we produce continues to make a real difference in people's lives.
100%. Now, Professor, you took over from Dr. Jane Olwoch. Can you touch on the increase in women in STEM-related fields that you have witnessed from when you started your professional career until now? How has that growth been?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for that question. Indeed, when I began my professional journey, the representation of women in STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, was quite limited. Women often faced structural barriers, lack of mentorship, and limited visibility in leadership role. However, over the years, I have witnessed a remarkable transformation. Today, more young women are entering and excelling in STEM disciplines. Driven by targeted initiatives, scholarships, mentorship programs, and a growing awareness about gender equity in science and innovation D.
Mm-hmm.
Institutions, including SASCO, have also been intentional about promoting women scientists and researchers, ensuring that their voices are heard in climate change, environmental management, and technological innovation spaces. So it's also really inspiring to see women not only participating, but leading major research projects, directing scientific institutions, and influencing policies, like you have seen in some of the events that we carried out in the past month.
Yes.
So this increase demonstrates that when opportunities are equitable, women rise to the occasion and make impactful contributions to the scientific society. And we also need to take note that the world has evolved to recognize that women belong at the decision-making table.
Yes.
They bring unique perspectives, strategic thinking, and the empathy that enrich leadership. So while we have made significant progress, we must also continue to nurture this growth by empowering girls at a young age, supporting women's career progression, and ensuring that the environment remains inclusive and enabling.
Most definitely.
Mm.
Now, Professor, for the listeners, can you describe what SASCO is and some of the work that the organization partakes in?
Certainly. SASCO stands for the Southern African Science Service Center for Climate Change and Adaptive Land Management.
Mm-hmm.
It's a regional organization that was established as an initiative of five member countries: Angola, Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, and Zambia, to strengthen the link between science, policy, and practical action in addressing climate change and sustainable land management in Southern Africa. Of course, working closely and supported by the federal government of Germany.
Yes.
These countries, way back in 2011, recognized that climate change does not respect borders. Its impacts are regional and interconnected. Therefore, a coordinated scientific approach was needed to generate reliable data, build local research capacity, and develop solutions that are relevant to the Southern African context. And hence, SASCO was designed to fill that gap, to promote collaborative research, share knowledge, and provide evidence-based advice to governments and communities.
Yes.
Those countries, way back in 2011, they also recognize that by working together, they can pool expertise, they can avoid duplications, and they can make a stronger, unified contribution to regional and global climate change adaptation and mitigation efforts. So some of our key activities include conducting climate and environmental research, developing data and information systems, building capacity through scholarships. You have heard that we have introduced what we call SGSP in member countries to train young scientists, even to PhD level, and support pilot projects that promote sustainable development.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, thank you very much for that explanation, and for the listeners who might not know, you have an extensive background in the social sciences and research. So how do you think this this experience of yours will help you in the role of the executive director of CESCO?
Thank you. That's a great question as well. My background in the social sciences and the research has really shaped how I approach leadership and the decision making.
Mm-hmm.
It has taught me to look beyond the technical aspect of science and understand the human, the social, and the policy dimensions that influence how scientific knowledge is used.
Yes.
At CESCO, where our mission is to bridge science and the policy, that perspective is invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me in ensure that our research not only advances knowledge, but also addresses real societal needs.
Yes.
From climate resilience and food security to sustainable livelihood. So my research experience also gives me a strong appreciation for evidence-based decision-making and collaboration across disciplines. And I believe that solutions to complex challenges like climate change requires both scientific innovation and social understanding. And
yes.
My background allows me to connect those dots effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And now speaking of evidence-based solutions, you know, CESCO has published many, many studies over the years, and in your short time as the executive director, can you describe how important and impactful this research has been to Namibia in particular?
Absolutely. Pascal's research has had a tremendous impact on Namibia and also across all other Pascal member countries. Over the years, the organization has produced valuable scientific data and the studies that have directly informed the national policies and the strategies on climate change, agriculture, water management, and biodiversity conservation, because these are our focus areas. For example, our climate observation and models have been instrumental in helping Namibia plan for drought resilience and water resource management. CESCO has also supported the training of Namibian scientists and the postgraduate students,
mm-hmm.
building a strong foundation for local expertise in environmental and climate sciences.
Yeah.
So, Dee, you have seen perhaps in social media that last week we were just in Zambia doing the handover of about 15 weather stations,
mm-hmm.
infrastructure that have been funded through CESCO.
Yes.
And they are making impact in the provision of data in that country.
Mm-hmm.
That same event is also lined up for Namibia on the 10th of November,
okay.
where we are going to hand over more than 40 weather stations that will complement what the government weather station, what the government has in terms of weather stations.
Yes.
So we are really making impact in all these countries through the acquisition of even those infrastructures.
No, that's great to hear.
Mm.
And so what are some specific areas of focus you have identified thus far, and are there any quantifiable goals that you are looking to achieve during your tenure as the ED?
Yeah, there is a lot on the plate.
I can imagine.
Since taking up the role, I have identified several key areas of focus that align with CESCO's mandate and the evolving needs of our region.
Okay.
Briefly, first, we really want to strengthen climate services
mm-hmm.
and data accessibility. This is to ensure that our research and the climate information are easily available and usable by policymakers, by farmers, and the communities. Secondly, I am also really prioritizing capacity building. We want to expand training opportunities, scholarships, and the mentorship to develop the next generation of Africa researchers who can drive innovation and sustainability.
Yeah.
Thirdly, we are focusing on expansion of SASCAR in terms of membership.
Okay.
Regional collaboration and the resource mobilization. So SASCAR currently operates across 5 member countries.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to expand it. As I said, climate change knows no borders. Our focus is to bring more Southern African nations or countries on board as members so that we can strengthen our collective voice and deepen regional collaboration in responding to this shared challenge that we call climate change.
Yeah.
So really, my vision is for SASCAR to be known and recognized globally mm-hmm. as an organization that not only produces excellent science, but also an organization that has a strong voice and influence in international climate change discussions, shaping conversations on climate change and ensuring that Southern Africa perspectives are heard and valued. 100%. That is my vision.
That's great to hear. Mm. Now, Professor, before I let you go, is there any last words you'd like to leave with the listeners this morning? That maybe I didn't touch on?
There is a lot to hear from SASCAR.
Yes.
SASCAR is a regional organization. Its secretariat is really based in Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
But it is responsible for the 5 countries that I have just mentioned. And I just want perhaps to say that everyone is invited from all across our member countries to join SASCAR in strengthening our collective action for climate adaptation and the resilience. Together, we can make a real difference.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Professor, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Dee. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Mm.
Yes, there was Professor Indongo, the Executive Director of SASCAR, speaking to us there this morning. And now I hand it back over to Tata Mike to Ondangwa to finish unpacking the day for us.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not.
No matter where you are.
Tell you.
If you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now.
now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, you are welcome back. Welcome back to Unpacking the Day. Thank you, Mr. HD, for that interview with Professor Indongo, the Executive Director of SASCAL. So, yeah, very interesting take there on climate adaptation and resilience. So some areas that we should be, you know, look into, especially as you talk about research and those kind of things. That's very, 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 very important. Well, we are back. We're back in the Ondangwa. We are back in the Ondangwa studio. So you are most welcome now to come through and either on the very topic that, that HD was now talking. You can have questions or comment on, not question, because I won't be able to ask to answer you. Not questions, or maybe questions that we will later send them to Professor as well. So, but come through with those two topics that we have covered so far. So you're most welcome. Eagle FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, that's Mike. I'm back.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, let me first start with the interview.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing indeed, because much of us, we are lacking when it comes to this information of climate change.
Yeah.
That's why in the north we are doing cross finger farming, because we don't have any the data if the rain is coming or to be drought. But if we have an organization doing research for us, it's a good thing indeed. And I think it's a hard time also when they are saying, she said they are going to go have a training, and I think they need to start a collaboration with what? The universities.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those people, then they can deploy them along the sides of the 14 constituents. Mm. So we have more information about even the way we go about it, our agriculture.
Yeah.
That is a way to go. Okay, let us go back to our spending.
Yeah. Mm. Our borrowing, actually.
Our borrowing, yeah. Yeah, it's always going in hand in hand, borrowing and spending.
Borrowing and spending. Where does the money goes? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You see, the thing is that for us to balance our spending is that I think we need to focus on the priority.
Mm.
Remember one thing, that we, as a government, we bought SUV recently.
Yeah.
And yet, those Maseta are not even that too old. I don't think they are even more than 10 years.
Yeah.
The Maseta which we are having recently, which then bought it recently.
Yeah.
And the thing is that sometimes I think it's a hard time when we are spending. Let me say now, it's not a bad thing that we are buying a new vehicle, but let us auction those old ones.
No, normally that's the case, actually. That first the owners, the ministers and whatever, are given the preference, but then, you know, then they're being auctioned. Yeah.
Yeah, because now the thing is that when I'm looking at, you go to the government garage, you see them, there are still a lot of Mercedes standing there.
Yeah. You know, and thing that I was also saying, I was thinking, you know, yeah, sometimes the government actually does, from the executive level, from the policy level and framework, and a legal framework, sometimes the government actually does exactly the right thing. But the problem comes now to the people that have to execute these services, and sometimes that's where we really, 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 really have a problem. If the red tapes and bureaucratic problems, you know.
Yeah.
So, and as I said, like those kind of things, there are laws that say this is how it should go, but you always have people, you know, who are now supposed to implement those laws. They don't.
They are delaying.
Of course,
we
want to see. Of course, what we want to see is an overseeing from leadership. That if people are not doing their work, they are out. That's what we need to see.
That is a good example of which I'm seeing also with the new government, and that is what we've been crying for how long, for 35 years, because people are doing this, and then they've been recycled in the system.
Yeah,
it's a hard time for you just to go. If you mess up, you mess up.
Because the spending sometimes it's really on the implementation level, where sometimes it doesn't happen, you know, what was intended. And oversight from the leadership, that's what we need. And we need to see the difference in terms of, if you're not working, you know, if you're not actually fulfilling what we want, go. And we see some of that now in the new administration, but we need to see it more often. Yeah.
Well, it's true. Mm. Because for me, borrowing, especially now we are borrowing internally, that's a good thing instead of external. Because the external always they are coming with a lot of what? Attachments.
Yeah.
And some of our attachments then we are not able as a country to fulfill. Yeah. But I think internal, and again also, remember one thing, that those people who are having more money are people from outside. They are the ones who are running our economy.
Yeah,
and they are the ones who are blowing the government.
The other thing is that I remember when I was talking to Mr. Shade, the Klaus, I asked the whole question of borrowing locally, and he said, that could be also a downside because the problem is that you're crowding out investors. So rural investors, they may not be able to have money to borrow, you know.
Yeah.
And the private investors, the private sectors may have not money to borrow. And in a simple terms, that who actually needs to create jobs is the private sectors. And
if they can't borrow,
you know, if they can't borrow money, they cannot be able to create jobs.
Which is true.
There need to be that balance.
Because now it will become also complicated when you see the governments have been borrowing money.
Yeah.
And now, when you go to a local bank, the rate to go up.
Yeah, even
for borrowing.
Interest rate.
Which is making for you as a private sector.
Yeah.
Not to try to expand, because to be more interesting than usual.
Mm.
And that's what I'm seeing, that it will be also, it's affecting us negatively also.
Yeah.
I think even
the interest rates for business, you know, it would affect business as well.
If you want to
want a loan for your business, or to expand your business, or whatever the case may be, or buying a house or a car, whatever the case may be,
yeah,
that would definitely also affect you as well.
Yeah, it's not really a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying now we need to start also focusing on the thing which we are looking for government. That's why I start with the vehicle. But if you see government property also, my friends, the way they are not being looked after, it's something else. And the government is about also to create demand. I mean, to gain something from their property.
Yeah.
Like a flat. You go to the flat, who are living there, they're just paying electricity and water. But from the government to get out of, making money out of their property, it's not really there. And when you look also at the property of government, some of them, like maybe, let me give you a special one which I know, MBC. If you come to North here, MBC is having a lot of houses there. But I'm telling you, those houses are just, I don't know, maybe it's even in Manala, people are sleeping there now.
Yeah.
But I don't know, they are having worker who are landing somewhere else. Why we cannot fix that, and then company, you are able to generate money.
Yeah.
You are not going to go to the government every time you need to what? To be bailed out.
Mm.
And this is what we are seeing also from Transnamibia. Transnamibia, they are having property everywhere.
And but, the problem is that we go and we continue borrowing, not because the money have been used, you know, wisely. It's because there has been people who have been wasteful for the money that we have, you know.
Yeah.
And we keep borrowing, and if we continue in this way, we're not thinking of the long term sustainability.
Long term, yeah, I'm telling you,
a real issue in few years to come. The debt can actually to a point where become unmanageable.
Yeah. I'm telling you, my friend.
Yeah. So yeah, we can say we are not in the red zone yet. Yeah, but you look at the trends. You look at the trends, and you started to see we are not yet there. But you know, we actually moving there.
I'm telling you, this is the time also to take these things seriously. That we need to start everything, evaluate to ourselves for what we achieve. What are we? Our targets.
Yeah.
Because the moment we don't have any target, because just imagine like now, if I give you two examples of those, but if you look, Mitiko, they lost like 400 something keto. And if you see now what they are saying, there are some even if already going on, if they are not going to get money, they may be even retrenched. You see all those nonsense. But why we cannot follow up 400,000 cattle which are missing just like that?
The thing is this. It's not that's the only thing. That's not the only thing. There are produce export overseas. And our export have reduced by 50%, almost by 50%.
Just imagine.
From last year. You know, that's a dramatic shift. It's a story that I even wanted to look at this morning. But, you know. It is a very serious one. Eh?
It's a serious, my friend.
Yeah.
Our parasites are supposed to be making money. Then we are not even worrying about like those things, like even like housing, because money comes from everywhere. MBC is bringing this, meeting is bringing this, Telecom is bringing this. All the companies are dead. Even Telecom itself, my friend, is not the way it used to operate anymore. Nothing. They are not even in the competition with anybody, but they are not really operating. You can see that everything is just downfall.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Mike, let me give other people a chance.
All right. Thanks for coming through.
All right, my brother.
All right. All right. Yeah. 0833-66091. You may come through on our initial story, the one of the government actually needing more money to meet its budget needs, and also the interview that HD have done with the professor in Dongo on Saska. Yeah, so very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Dr. Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
No, fine, man. How are you?
Well, it's a Monday, and mine are not blue. They are always green, you know.
Oh, that's good. Your system that you are using, do you have a system that indicates that there is somebody knocking at your door?
Yep.
Okay.
If someone is on the line already, because there's only one line, I won't be able that someone is calling again. But once the other one is done, I can see that, yeah, someone is knocking.
Yeah, I think you need that kind of system, especially when, because there are days where you have volume, the number of people that want to call.
Yeah.
There are days where you don't have anyone.
Yeah.
So that you regulate the minutes that you give to individual.
Yeah.
When there are no people, then you are not a person. When there are people, you try as much as to accommodate as many as you can.
Yeah. Mm.
Financial inclusion.
Yeah.
Remember that story, the story in Swakop?
Remind me?
We know there was a workshop in Swakop where the... When they were talking about the financial inclusion.
Yeah. So I even have a colleague of mine, we have an interview as well on that, yeah.
Yes, yes, yeah. So now you are talking about government want to borrow from the domestic market.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Mm.
And now you just highlighted the issue from the previous interview you had where they were talking about crowding out, the potential, that potential of crowding out.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you know that government borrowing has a potential to empower everyone in their communities in Namibia?
Definitely.
Financially.
Yeah.
Okay. I was trying to get information. Hopefully, during the day, I'll get the information.
Yeah.
On the composition of those that borrow to governments. Who are these people? Do we have...
Borrowing to the government.
Lending money to the government.
Lending. It's a commercial bank and the pension fund.
Okay, now. Now, just imagine if government decide to educate...
And some rich people also as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just imagine... Yeah. Yes, if government decide to educate traditional leaders, local authorities, all the people in the communities, the possibilities or that opportunity of lending money to the government.
Hmm.
Just imagine if government decide, okay, we are going to borrow 1 billion from the local market, and this time we want a wider participation. We want even people from the grassroots to participate, such that they will even ask those who don't have enough to meet the threshold, because normally they will say the minimum they can take is 10,000 or 100,000, where they will say, okay, if you can arrange yourself, put yourself in a group, pull the money together, as long as you have, this is what you have met the requirement, then you can give us, lend us money.
How risky is that for
in terms of
for what is it now I'm looking at the stable institution like the commercial bank and also when you talk about pension funds, so but individual how I'm trying to look at maybe I don't know how what am I thinking at the at this point in time. For the government actually to lend from such a organization, from such a, you know.
Okay, let me help you.
Yeah.
It's only risky if government was lending to those people.
Yeah.
But since it's borrowing from them, there's no risk involved.
Yeah.
Yes. It could have been only be a challenge if government was giving them money.
It's actually giving the money, okay. Yeah.
Maybe but if... Yeah, I think that is where you, But since it is five people bringing their money together, and then they say, let us give this 50,000 to the government.
Mm.
Then there's no risk involved, because at the end of the day, when it's time for the government to pay up, they just pay in that account, and then these guys, they are going to distribute among themselves.
I was thinking the other way around. Yeah.
You think the other way around. Yes. Yeah. That is the only the risk. But in this case, you can see that that government action has the potential to empower everyone in the community. But so far, if we get the information, you realize that people that who have benefited, these are commercial banks, pension funds, and the well-off individual, but people at the grassroots, they have not really benefited from that action of the government.
Mm.
Take example of the traditional leaders or traditional authorities.
Yeah.
Just imagine if all of the traditional authority had, they have established a commercial arms for their communities.
Yeah.
Okay? Where they have a way of raising funds, and when opportunity like this comes, then they take that fund,
invest it in
the government bonds, and then later the government will pay. Remember, government bond is one of the risk involved is very, very low.
It's very, very low.
So the chances of losing your money, it's very, 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 very minimum.
Yeah.
So I think we should start thinking of how do we make use of this government action to empower everyone in the community, not just the commercial banks, the pension funds, and those who are well off.
Mm.
Let's see how everyone can benefit, because that is one of the way to empower all the citizens.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
And imagine, you know, when you're talking about also when you maybe not the pension fund, but when you're talking about commercial bank, you're also talking banks that are not 100% local.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. They are locally residing, you know, but owners are not local. Yeah.
Owners are not local.
Mm.
Yeah. Remember, the government have short-term renting, like the borrowing, like the treasury bills. They have the long-term, the bonds issue, the bond part of it. So then individual can think of where can, if for instance, if I have 100,000 that I will need in 6 months, and the government want to borrow that for 2 or 3 months, I can give it to the government for quickly, and then I will make some money, and then by the time I will need the money, the fund is there.
But is this an issue from exactly the idea that you're talking about? Is this an issue of policy, or is it just something that isn't something that is accessible to individual or group who may want to do so, or is it something that is limited by the policy that is there right now?
Okay. Do you know there are way to there are way or silence way of denying people opportunities? One of the most effective silence way of denying people opportunities is to have policy that that is open. Even if you go to the Bank of Namibia now, they will tell you we are free to open to borrow from anyone.
Yeah.
But do we have any education or distribution of information?
Yeah.
Whereby people are educated, communities are informed.
Yeah.
Even when the government went out of their way and say, listen, this is an opportunity for you as a communities.
Mm.
Do we have that part? We don't have that. Yes, policy might not prevent anyone to participate. But the question is, how many of us who are aware that we can participate? And in since we are not aware, what has the government done to make sure that everyone is aware?
Mm.
In
some way, these are deliberate information held so that you are not be able to access that maybe bond as we talk or any other benefits that you may, which is actually the same thing when it's come to commercial bank with individual. There could be some benefits that as an individual who bank with that bank could actually benefit, but you have no idea. You know, that education that you're talking about is very important.
Yeah, just imagine, it's not in the interest, do you know that it's not in the interest of the commercial bank for individual to directly to participate? Why? Because commercial bank use people's money to purchase those assets. So now, if individual is aware and they start participating, that means that the fund, people are going to withdraw their money. I will take my 100,000 if I have, go to the central bank and buy my treasury bills. So it's not in the interest of the commercial banks for people to be aware.
Yeah.
And I think that they have, I'm not accusing the commercial banks, but I'm accusing our Bank of Namibia and the government itself.
Yeah.
They have not made that information available to everyone.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They might have, it might be open to everyone. But just for the fact that it's open, but you have not go out there to educate your people.
It's open, but if you don't have if you have no information, you won't be able to access it. Yeah,
you won't be able to access it.
Mm.
Okay, Mark, let us give a chance to others.
No, thanks for coming through.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, that's a different way. That's a different take at looking at this. You know, so create that opportunity so that. Individuals can organize themselves and be able to, you know, to actually, you know, access the bonds, these bonds from the government, you know. So, a very good morning. Unpacking the day.
Yes, Michael.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
I'm great.
Mm.
Mike, I, you know, I have a problem with the education systems
with education,
in our world.
The education yeah, what we're talking about.
The education system in our world.
Yeah.
I mean, regular customers, you know, I mean, your callers, you understand, you know what I'm saying because I've explained this in detail.
Yeah.
The very first questions, the arguable questions that you really need have to ask you, or the government have to ask themselves.
Yeah.
Is why do you borrow money?
Mm.
When you answer that question to yourself, why do you borrow money? And then it comes to...
You feel the gap. You realize that you need more money to, you know, to fill the gap, you know?
Yeah, but the main aim for the government to borrow money is to actually build infrastructures for the government and also to stimulate the economies of the country. Now, how do you...
You have operational budget and you have the capital budget. So, for instance...
Yeah, but they somehow borrow separately, I think. And it can also be the same as you are actually saying.
Yeah.
But let's start also on what I'm saying now. You borrow the money to develop the country and also to stimulate the economies of the country.
Exactly.
How do you get the money you borrow to stimulate the economies of the country? You then find out in which sector do we invest this money more.
Yeah.
Once you identify that sector, then you find out who are the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
Who get, if it's tender, who gets this tender? If it's other business sectors, who get to get this money? Who benefit the most? And then you find out, why do you always have to borrow?
So you see, the reason why you are asking the question is also because there are no transparent way of us knowing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And therefore, I mean, I'm saying that actually the questions that you're asking are very important because that actually shows that there aren't transparent way of us knowing, you know, when we borrow, where do we invest this money, you know? Which should be there. We should be
where, do we,
where the money goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have to make sure the most question is that you have to make sure that at least 65% of this money remain in the country. The profit money.
Yeah.
Let me say, for instance, you spend more money on building the country's infrastructures, schools, roads, railways, and so on. Now you look at who do you give this tender to? These people that you gave tender, where are they going to spend their profit money?
Yeah.
Is it within the country or is it outside the country? So if it's within the country, then obviously the next budget, you are not going to borrow more like you did. So the deficits have to decline.
Right.
But because if the outside that, if the money goes to the outside, obviously that money is going to stimulate the countries of that where those people come from or that company is from, not your country. And that means your deficits deepen, and you have to go borrow again.
Exactly. So you find yourself in that circle.
So the government is actually peddling in a wrong economical policy. Now, where do you post questions? The education system. How do you understand this? Is this very, very easy to understand? Somebody with a grade 12 like me can actually understand this. Who is going to say that is not the case? Go back to the policy, the system that Sam Nujoma have used, whereby this project has been actually being worked on a basis of phase one, when the money is available, our own money, phase two, phase three, and we were able to reach more. We didn't borrow money. When are these people going to ask themselves, where do they go wrong?
And the whole question of sustainability becomes an issue. It's really become an issue. You know,
you see, I sometimes think that this program is yours and Chombe's one. They must be given some little bit of time so that people like us and everybody must actually comes in there in the studios and we paddles on this one. We discuss this thing.
Yeah.
We never used to borrow this like this. We never. There are a lot of structures that has been actually built under Sam Nujoma's cabinet. A lot of locations here I can mention that has been actually built under the cabinet of Sam Nujoma. It is because of the policy that was in place. You don't go borrow, you make use of what you have. Today we have people that are benefiting from the natural resources, and he doesn't want to share. And these companies, most of these people, they don't come to social, what? How do we call it? Social
responsibility or what?
Social responsibility or something like that. They don't contribute. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
You see, and they don't see the need of value additions to what they actually have. How can somebody get a tender of about 7 billion? And this person is in construction. And then you look at most of these materials, he imported the materials from China or from where, it's outside the country, South Africa, the tires and all those things.
Yeah.
These are enough money able to somebody to go outside there and come with an investor and said, look, let's set up this 50-50. Let's set up this factories.
Yeah.
Hmm? The marbles or whatever, stones just, are just taken from Caribbean here, going out of the countries.
Yeah.
Those are stones that we actually make tiles. Where do we got our tiles?
I mean, we got it from outside, you know.
And yeah.
I think that's one thing that tiles, even cement, we make cement here, but we don't, all our cement is not just from here. So it's also, we import cement as well, you know. Even the nails that you use, the nails that you use, they're imported, you know.
The what?
The nail emboka, you know.
yeah, of course, yeah, the nails, yeah. Of course. You see, the government does not have the database of those who benefit the most than the others. They don't have, like, companies that don't got big tenders. Look, we gave you this 900 million. It's almost a billion. Your profit is almost about 500 something or so, 300. What did you do in the countries? What did you do with the money that we gave you? Because it's obvious that the government, by giving tenders out, is to empower individuals to actually venture in other businesses.
Yeah.
Mm. But they don't do that.
Yeah. So when you're giving tender, you're also giving employment. You also, it's economic growth.
You know, yeah. How many employees do you have now?
And in terms of infrastructure. So there's so many things that, you know, yeah. So.
You see, those are the things that need it. When you don't know where you come from and where you are going, when you don't have that information, obviously you are just in the vacuum.
Yeah. No, sometimes, the other thing is that sometimes it's where we found ourselves now. Let's say, for example, we have this massive, you know, unemployment problems. So what do? Anything that comes and said, we're going to actually employ about 500 people, you jump on it. So you're not thinking in terms in the long term anymore. You're only thinking of how do I actually solve this problem. And I think this is in the mode we are now. You know,
that is the biggest problem that we are having, Mike.
Yeah.
Our people have to think, and I don't know what is our national plan is doing. National plan, what is it doing? Why is it not doing anything? There is no sector that the government can say we can lean on there. This one is better. No. Nothing.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe road or something like that. Yeah, road, maybe we are better.
Yeah, the other time we talked about from the road administration, we said, well, now the road, the protective layers are deteriorating. And they're also talking about the deficit of how much money they need actually to upgrade the road and all that. So it's all...
The government is actually investing in government economical policies that is unsustainable. Look, last time I spoke to Shombe or the other guys who had the program, it's from 6.
Yeah, Dwight,
that
yeah.
I have proposed for such a long time. It's from 15 to 14 when I was in Katima, and I thought, look, people, we are sitting on the diamond.
Yeah.
And much of the money that we borrowed here, we don't see where this money goes. Why don't you take that railway from Grootfontein to Katim, to Rundu, and then to Katima?
Yeah.
Imagine how many people are you going to employ there? That is a sustainable economical project.
Yeah.
None of them want to do. They have been talking about it, and they don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
But they keep on borrowing money. And invest in a project that fails.
Yeah, and the whole railway idea from, as we talk about, the founding father that was going to Chicago.
Of course.
Yeah.
That, look, if you have been in Katima, you go to Vanilla Board.
Yeah.
Right now I can call somebody. There is about 40 trucks waiting for their paper to be finished, crossing already. Waiting for their documents to be finished so that they can actually embark on the road to Swakop Motu, to Vavis Bay, to the harbor.
Yeah.
And each and every consignment is about 40 tons to 30 tons.
Yeah.
And when you find them on the road, they cover up a distance of about 15 kilometers.
Yeah.
In between them. How much money do we spend to maintain that road each and every year? That road is about 1,400 kilometers from Katima to Thu.
Yeah.
If we can set up a rail, we can save that money also.
And we can also
create jobs for the Rundu peoples and also for the Katima peoples.
Mm.
But they don't want, because they want, they somehow maybe perhaps wait for a private company to come and do that and own up that money. And then we will go back in the other problem, the big holes that we wear.
Yeah.
You see, this is the problem. But you borrow money. Why do you borrow money and each and every year you borrow money and you don't invest in a sustainable economical policy?
Yeah.
There are a lot here in this country. You just have to make sure that 90 or even 60% of that money that you have borrowed, once you give up the project or you give up the tender, it's going to remain in the country.
Exactly.
And then you are done.
I wanted
to talk about the investment that you, I mean, the interview that happened now in Window.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, I have a problem. Eh?
Yeah.
Yet again, this will again, my argument will again reflect to the education system that we're having.
Mm.
That is actually designed to fail at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Intentionally
or just accidentally?
It is intentional.
Yeah.
I want to give you an example. As I always tell you that the world is divided. I want to give you an example of the Indians and the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians. Those are people with human capacities.
Yeah.
Human resource capacities in every aspect of life, be it economics and everything. They can come up with everything. But, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
But when the Chinese want to provide energy securities to their peoples,
yeah,
when they divest that one, they don't talk about green hydrogen. Green energy or renewable energies last. They secure that by making sure that several countries are actually supplying them with gas, oil, crude oils, and not these things that we are actually being actually told here, these sham projects of green hydrogen. Now you want to ask yourself, don't these people want it? Because they are saying it's going to be most of the viable energy resources in the world, in the whole world. And India is going to be one of the energy countries in the world.
Yeah.
All right. Where does this coming from? Apparently, we are going to prevent global warming. What caused global warming? Apparently, emissions that comes from the cars, the whatever.
Mm.
How much does Namibia contribute? I mean, Africa contribute at like 4%.
Very less, yeah.
4%. You see? Now, the simulations of the effect of the global warming is much more effect in the country of those that contribute less.
Mm.
Can you believe that? Donald Trump is flying with a big aeroplane.
Alone.
And so does Starmer. So does Friedrich Merz, and so does Macron, so does their they are globalists. These those that goes to WEF, the World Economic Forum. They are flying on the private jet each and every day. They've got industries there.
Yeah.
They are testing weapons every day there. But that stimulate that effect does not cause any disasters in their country, only in Africa. Can somebody think of that?
Yeah.
Eh? Can somebody think of that? What did Trump say at the General Assembly? What did he say? I think everybody, even you yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Your countries are going to hell. If you embark on that green hydrogen nonsense, your country is going to hell. Look, I have been thinking about this thing for such a long time. The globalists, when they started in 1961, they come up when they want to arrest the world in every aspect of life.
Yeah.
You control the food, the money, and the land. It has been difficult for them to actually find out as to how they are going to do that in Africa.
Yeah. But when
why?
Almost the time. But when you don't have the know-how, you will always prone to be manipulated and believe anything what somebody come tells you. Well, you will become the hump of green energy the whole of Africa and the whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
You say yes. All right.
Yeah, yeah, Mike.
Yeah.
Have you seen one of the Europeans and Americans volunteer, the so-called volunteers in our villages there, deep in the village?
Yeah.
You haven't seen them. Have you seen that they were having laptops and cell phones that are connected to what? To what is this? Satellite.
Yeah, Starlink. What is it?
They were then actually studying our livelihood. The vast majority of African people, they survive on the rain. When the rains comes, they produce their own food. They don't necessarily go to the shop and buy. So they don't need these factories processed food.
Yeah.
So in order for them to convince people, they have to stop the rain.
Yeah.
They stop the rain and that's all. Then you'll be in the queue.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think it's about time we are sending our people to the universities of the CSO, the Shanghai Corporations, the BRICS, and all those things. Yeah. This education nonsense that we are actually having.
So thanks for
be it in any sector, it does not hold water for us.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
All right. Let's do that tomorrow again. Thanks for coming through.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Chef, bye. All right, our time is about 3 minutes past the hour of 10. We need to cross to Wintuk, so you guys are still coming through. But yeah, so you can join Tate France is coming up with Kuthamosha from myself, Mike Oshaveli. I wish you a very good week, a very productive week, and a good day ahead. From me and from Unpacking the Day. So we still have a day tomorrow, to tackle some other issues. So from me, a very good morning and a very good day ahead. So yeah, join Tate France on Kuthamosha. Thanks for your contribution and for your participation. All right.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Omutiha, utekiro kaguna, imatina, omjo. Chikao shafa sanana, na longeshifa, ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao, ota ingongoti samweni. Anageshifa, ya Namibia, omjitombo na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nilanditoma iwe yongeshefa yoyo kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende kuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa letu. Moambo dengira seoma onarahita tuimu. Ndatu hea lihamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM. The Eye.